This year's been a roller coaster, and not the fun kind. Business, no. It's a dangerous time not to know your numbers. That's why you need NetSuite by Oracle. Over 31,000 businesses have the confidence they need. NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing offer. Head to netsuite.com/minute.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, October 28th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. The world has been waiting for self-driving cars for quite a long time, and a number of companies are making progress on delivering them, just maybe not as fast or as profitably as they hoped. The future of autonomous driving was a prime topic of conversation at The Wall Street Journal's Tech Live conference this week. At the event, I sat down with our tech reporter Tim Higgins for a special live taping of the show to discuss what executives are saying about when self-driving will be available on more roads and how investors are feeling about it. That's after these headlines. It's official. After months of back and forth, Elon Musk has bought Twitter. The world's richest man completed the $44 billion purchase on Thursday, avoiding a deadline that would have forced him and the company to face off in a Delaware court. After completing the deal, Musk wasted no time in making some big changes. Sources say he immediately fired the company's CEO, Parag Agarwal, as well as its CFO, its top legal and policy executive, and its general counsel. Spokespeople for the company didn't comment. And the changes for Twitter are likely just getting started. Joining me to discuss what the deal could mean is our Twitter reporter, Alexa Kors. Hi, Alexa. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This has been quite an ordeal for Twitter. There's been a lot of back and forth about what will happen. What has the impact of all of that been on the company?
Right. I mean, there's been a lot of uncertainty for months, and that's been hard on employees. And the company also acknowledged that it's had some impact on their advertising sales business too. I've heard the mood internally described as deflated or worried. We've also seen Musk try to reach out to employees. He visited headquarters himself last week and held some meetings. So we'll see how that relationship evolves.
This is an expensive deal. What is the financial future for Twitter once this is done?
Right. Well, one thing to keep in mind is that this deal means Twitter will add billions of debt, and the annual interest payments could be more than $1 billion. So they'll have those new costs. And then the digital advertising market has been weaker lately, and we know that's been affecting a number of platforms, so that's also probably going to be a challenge.
What are advertisers thinking the platform is going to be like for them now that it's owned by Musk?
Advertising is a huge part and most of Twitter's business, and many advertisers tend to want control so that their ads don't appear next to content that is offensive or embarrassing. So we've reported that some advertisers have concerns because Musk has said for months that he wants to emphasize free speech and have more limited content moderation. But actually, just on Thursday, Musk sent a message to advertisers saying he wants to work with them and that he thinks it's important for Twitter to be a warm and welcoming place. So we'll see if he can address advertisers' concerns.
All right, that's our reporter, Alexa Kors. Thanks for joining us, Alexa.
Thanks for having me.
We have more coverage of Musk's Twitter takeover on our website, wsj.com. The rollout of big tech earnings continued yesterday. Amazon said sales rose 15% from a year earlier to just over $127 billion. That marks a return to profitability after two quarters of losses, though net income was 9% lower last quarter than a year earlier, and it projected sales in the current quarter would be far below its earlier expectations. Meanwhile, Apple continued a pandemic streak of record revenue. Overall, sales in the third quarter rose 8% from last year to just over $90 billion. iPhone sales were up nearly 10% as the company largely avoided the global economic challenges, supply chain disruptions, and slowdown in demand that have hit the smartphone market. But it wasn't such a positive quarter for Intel. The chipmaker said it started cost-cutting measures, including job cuts, as a drop in demand for PCs weighs on its business. Intel's sales fell 20% last quarter, and the company lowered its revenue forecast for the year. And more venture capital in recent years has been going in to quantum computing. The tech has the power to turbocharge computing by completing complex calculations. Sean McGuire, a partner at Sequoia Capital, is an investor in the sector, and others. And he thinks it could revolutionize industries like healthcare and materials development. I ran into him at this year's Tech Live event. Sean, thank you so much for taking time to talk to Tech News Briefing.
Thank you for having me.
So you were here at Tech Live discussing quantum computing. You know, for those who don't really interact with this idea, where might they see quantum computing in their everyday lives? If I'm just like a normal consumer.
Unfortunately, you're not going to see it in your everyday life for a long time for two reasons. One is that it's still a long ways away. Second is that the first applications will be in materials and chemistry. And so it'll be, you know, inputs, you know, maybe when you're having a cup of coffee, the cup that it comes in will be some new plastic designed by a new, you know, by a quantum computer. But it's not like classical computing where you're going to go sit down at your quantum computer and write a blog post.
Outside of quantum computing, what's really exciting you in tech right now?
Technology's moving at a crazy rate. We're lucky to be investors in SpaceX. It's been incredible to see how fast Starlink can grow and launch into new geographies. Eventually, when SpaceX starts flying their next generation rocket Starship, it's going to really drop the cost of space access. You know, automation is a field that is moving really quickly right now. Machine learning, or AI, depending what you call it, is just like, if you go on Twitter, you'll see all these generative AI applications. It's just incredible how fast AI is evolving.
And that would probably evolve faster with quantum computing, no?
This is one where AI, I think that, so there's a lot of people that talk about quantum applied to AI. I actually think that's a pretty bad application. Just like the way that AI works, you need more memory and usually large data sets. And that's not where quantum computing is good. Where quantum computing is good is simulating physics. And that comes into play in chemistry and biology and material science and things like that.
Sean McGuire from Sequoia Capital, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, why hasn't self-driving tech been speeding onto roads as quickly as hoped? We talked about it in our first ever taping in front of a live audience. That's after the break.
This year's been a roller coaster, and not the fun kind. Business, no. It's a dangerous time not to know your numbers. That's why you need NetSuite by Oracle. Over 31,000 businesses have the confidence they need. NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing offer. Head to netsuite.com/wallstreet.
All this week, we've been bringing you some of the most interesting and thought-provoking discussions from the Wall Street Journal's Tech Live conference. To wrap up the week, we recorded a special episode in front of a live audience outside in Laguna Beach, California. I sat down with WSJ tech reporter Tim Higgins to discuss a key theme from the conference: why self-driving technology hasn't lived up to the hype, at least not as quickly as promised. Case in point, Intel spun out its self-driving car unit Mobileye this week, valuing it at $17 billion. That is more than it paid for the company, but far less than the $50 billion Intel had hoped for. So why have Mobileye and others in the autonomous driving space struggled? Here are highlights from that conversation with Tim. Tim, I want to start with Intel. Pat Gelsinger was here at Tech Live on Monday, and he was asked about the company's plans to spin out Mobileye. Intel brought Mobileye to an IPO at a significantly lower valuation than was expected. What went wrong?
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of maybe a canary in the coal mine, if you will, about the state of autonomous vehicle technology out there. Mobileye It produces the kind of the brains for driver assist programs out there for vehicles, but also is working on fully self-driving technology. And they were hoping to IPO at a valuation of $50 billion, and now it's dramatically less. A, you've got an issue that the market for IPOs is just, it's a horrible time to be out there. But there's also concern among investors that I have talked to just about kind of the state of autonomous vehicle technology. Is this actually going to happen in the near term? And where does Mobileye play in that? You know, this is something, this kind of technology, not just Mobileye, but this the state of driverless cars, we have been talking about it for more than a decade, and it's always kind of been something that was near term, it was just on the horizon, but it's proven time and time again to be harder than everybody initially anticipated, and I think some people's patience is waning for it.
Okay, then where does the state of driverless technology stand at the moment?
Well, it's not Knight Rider, you know, the the famous self-driving car crime fighter.
Sure.
It's more nuanced and more limited. You can take a fully self-driving car in Phoenix right now using Waymo, which is Google's self-driving subsidiary. But, you know, this is limited. You can't go everywhere out there. And they're slowly rolling out this service. They're going to San Francisco, and they just announced Los Angeles. And what we've found and what they have found is that there's a huge back-end component to this technology. You gotta charge the vehicle, you gotta put windshield wiper fluid, you gotta clean it out if somebody leaves their purse or, you know, they vomit in it or whatever. You got this huge infrastructure back there, which I tend to call the vomit problem, because you think the idea of when this technology was first talked about years ago was this is all going to be automated and robots are going to be taking over and it was just going to be so easy, you could just deploy these things. Well, it actually requires an army of people behind the scenes to keep the logistics going. And that's one of the big surprises, I think, that the industry has dealt with in recent years, is trying to figure out that complexity.
You spoke with the Waymo co-CEO here at Tech Live on Monday. We actually have a clip of what she said in reaction to what it is to get these cars on the road.
This is really about being patient in the learning, but being very precise in our execution of what makes this a delightful service.
So a delightful service, do we have an idea of when they're going to be able to turn this into a more accessible, delightful service?
It's a city-by-city kind of problem for them. I mean, think about me as a driver. You can plot me down in Phoenix, or I can go to San Francisco or Los Angeles, and I can get off the plane and just start driving. But for them, their driver, which is how they call their service, has to be tuned for all those markets. It has to be trained. The infrastructure has to be built around it, and it's taking time to do that. So it's clear they're getting faster at it, but it's also, it's more than an engineering problem. We talked about logistics, but there's a political issue. In Phoenix, they were able to easily roll out, or they rolled it out. But in California, there's a level of bureaucracies involved that they have to have permissions from various places, and that takes time.
You know, that's such a good point. And Pat Gelsinger, who was also here at Tech Live, he spoke about that a little bit when he talked about IPOing Mobileye. I think we have a clip from him on regulation as well.
Many other cities and countries around the world are much more advanced than the regulatory policies enabling autonomous vehicles, you know, to emerge more rapidly. And clearly, you know, to me, you know, not only do we need things like CHIPS and Science Act to move things forward, but we also need regulatory policies to enable technologies to come forward.
So, Tim, does that gel with what you've been hearing from other autonomous driving companies?
You know, it's interesting. For years writing about this, there's always been this belief that self-driving technology would have an easier time deploying in China just because the government could turn it on if they wanted to. It's not necessarily the case for U.S. companies, given that these are essentially mobile map-making machines, and there's concerns about national security there. So there's, you go market to market, there's different complexities and there's different logistical hurdles, if you will. Here in the States, the challenge has been traditionally the federal government oversees the car and the states oversee the driver. And so the question becomes, when the car is the driver, who's in charge there? A company like Waymo would like it to be at a federal level so you can have one rule to rule at all here in the states, where, you know, we're still kind of in early days of local governments deciding how they want to weigh in.
What does that regulatory environment and this kind of maybe slower development than expected mean for investors in this space?
It's all kind of that level of complexity and risk that just increases. We saw in 2018 the first death of a person involved who was hit by a test-driving, self-driving car in Phoenix area by Uber at the time. And that really put the industry back. It all of a sudden shook a lot of people who said, you know, this, if it wasn't already clear, we are dealing with life and death technology. And that gives people some pause. You know, how do you know if the system works? How do you know if the car that's being put on the road is safe?
Tim Higgins, WSJ reporter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And that's it for Tech News Briefing this week. Our producer is Julie Chang. Our supervising producer is Chris Zinsley. And I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
The Wall Street Journal editorial page is always on top of the latest from Washington and around the world. I'm Kyle Peterson, and you can join me, Paul Jagot, Kim Strassel, and our colleagues on the Potomac Watch podcast each Monday through Friday. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app.